And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Before I start today's show, this is part two of a two-part series. I actually didn't plan for it to be a two-part series, but when I was recording part one, I was really stretching out and really fitting it in, and I didn't want an hour-long episode. I wanted to give you a chance to breathe, to listen to the episode again, to ask some questions on Twitter or Facebook, to clear up any misconceptions or any lingering questions you might have had before I move into part two. If you're just jumping in now and you haven't listened to part one, hit the stop button now. And then I don't need to give you any further instructions because you should have hit stop. But you should go listen to part one because I'm going to just briefly review it. But if you haven't been introduced to these topics before, you're going to be as lost as a porcupine in... that sounds like a metaphor, right? For something. I was trying to make up a metaphor on the fly, but I didn't know porcupine. I don't know if you can finish that metaphor for me for someone being lost, a good woodsy metaphor. Let me know. Anyway, this is part two. On with the show. You know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how this show works. You online to Twitter or Facebook. Use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman. Pop in a little question and I'll pop out a little answer on this show. Your questions live, well, recorded and stuff, but, you know, answered no matter what on the show. You can also reach me at askaspaceman.com or emailing askaspaceman@gmail.com or by following me on Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, all that. My name is Paul Matt Sutter. Three names because why not? Now, we have a very simple goal with this show. Complete knowledge of time and space. It'll take a while, I admit, but we're in no hurry. As evidence for being in no hurry, I'm on part two of a split episode, part one before. We're talking about space-time. Fundamental question, what is space-time? In fact, I got lots of questions. Let me read through the questions related to space and time that I got. Luke asked, what's the relationship between space and time? Tim Vonnegut asked, when does time equal space? Robert Benson asked, how are things moving faster than the expansion of the universe? They appear to move faster than the speed of light. Kent Linkletter asked, what effect would being at the center of the Earth have on time dilation? Mark asked, why do most scientists believe variables like the speed of light have been constant throughout time? Matt Atzenhofer, on behalf of his 5.5-year-old daughter, Ruth, who wants to be a princess and a scientist, asked, is there any place in the universe that is not moving? Michael Friedman asked, what is time? Dean L. asked, will it be possible in the span of humanity to get from one end of the universe to the other? All sorts of great, excellent questions about space and time. Love all these questions. I realized that in attempting to answer it, I would have had one single hour-long show, so I split it up. Part one was introducing the concept of our modern ideas of space and time and how it evolved from the concepts that Newton and Galileo had originally thought of having like an absolute universal reference frame, a stage and a master clock against which all other things are measured, and how Maxwell and Einstein and lots of people at the turn of the 20th century really turned this idea on the head and just said, yes, all motion is relative to each other, but there's no such thing as an absolute stage. Just all motion is relative to each other, period. End of sentence, end of story. Let's go home. Well, no, let's not go home. Let's stay here and get some work done because there's some really interesting applications for this theory. And I ended with this great quote by Erman Minkowski, where he said, look, guys, this is a crazy idea, just spitballing here, but we've got these experiments that say there's this constant speed of light and space and time aren't going to be individual things anymore. They're going to be unified space-time, one thing, one box to put everything in. That was Minkowski, probably not the voice he used. Probably used a different voice, but I haven't heard him, so you don't know, and I don't know either. So, let's dig into applications, practice. How can we put special relativity for our own profit and amusement? Well, one of the consequences, one of the ways I like to think about this relativity of motion and differences in measuring lengths and times is I think of us all, everything in the universe, as moving at the speed of light. Now, hold on. I know you're thinking, wait, I'm not moving at the speed of light, Paul, Matt, Sutter. I just checked. There goes some light. Pew! And it's moving a lot faster than me. I agree. Light is moving a lot faster than you through space. But remember, there's no such thing as just space. There is only space-time, a four-dimensional thing. And I like to think of us all as moving through space-time, the four-dimensional thing, at the speed of light. But you can trade time for space. You can move slowly in the spatial dimensions and quickly through the time dimensions. So you can move slowly, you know, inching across space, but have a long perception of time. And by the way, before I go any further, I don't just mean a psychological perception of time. I mean a physical perception of time. And I'll get to that. Actually, I'll get to that right now. Let's just jump right in. Moving clocks run slow. That's the upshot. Moving clocks run slow relative to clocks that are not moving as fast. And the faster your clock goes, the slower, the physically slower it will go. The longer the second hand will take to click. Physical, not perception, not mental perception of time, but real physical, biological, physical time runs slow. And that's because the faster you go through space, the slower you go through time. That's the way I like to think about it. And vice versa. If you go slow in space, then your clock in time runs nice and fast because you're moving through space-time, through the unified four-dimensional thing at one speed, but you're trading. I'm moving through the three dimensions of space and the dimension of time at one speed, but I can trade one for the other, right? I can kind of angle it. I can go a little bit faster in speed, which means there's less of me going through the time dimension. And if there's less of me going through the space dimensions, there's more of me going through the time dimension. I know it sounds a little bit woo-y, but this is the way I like to think about it. So moving clocks run slow. The faster you go through space, the slower your physical clock runs. That means you can have twins on Earth, exact same, identical twins, put one in a rocket ship, blast it off close to the speed of light, go really, really far away, and then come back. And you know what? That twin that was on Earth, that twin's clock runs really, really fast because he hasn't moved around in space much. And now that twin is really old. But the twin that went on that rocket ship, went for a little ride close to the speed of light, comes back. That twin has not experienced a lot of time because it's been going through a lot of space. It traded its passage in time through passage in space. And so it comes back and it is now younger. You have one twin that is much older than the other twin. Why? Because that's the way the universe works, folks. That's why. because you can trade passage in time for passage in space. Here's another example. There's this little subatomic particle called a muon. You may not have heard of it, but they're all around you. Muon, lifetime of like 2 microseconds, I think. Not exactly sure of the exact number, but it's like a couple microseconds, not long, not a long-lived particle. If it's created, you got 2 microseconds before it evaporates into other things. But here's the weird thing. Muons are created when cosmic rays, high-energy particles, slam into our atmosphere, hit air molecules. Some muons are created there. They're born, and they shower down, and they reach the ground. And you can figure out how far away the ground is, how fast the muon's going, and you know the lifetime of the muon in a lab is 2 microseconds, and guess what? 2 microseconds ain't enough time. 2 microseconds is not enough time for the muon to reach the Earth. So how the heck do we have muons on the surface of the Earth coming at us from the upper atmosphere? Because moving clocks run slow. That muon, that puny muon, is moving close to the speed of light. So its physical clock runs slow. So it gets an enhanced lifetime according to us. Remember, all motion is relative. According to the muon, it still only lives 2 microseconds, but since it's moving so fast relative to us, it looks like it lives a lot longer. It's trading speed in time, movement through time, through movement in space. It gets to live a lot longer in our frame. And that's one of the confusing things about relativity. It all depends on your frame. There's no such thing as this background stage where everything is absolute and we can all measure things relative to that, make reference to that. Oh, yeah, that muon was going close to the speed of light relative to that background stage. No. That's not how the universe works anymore. And it hasn't worked that way for at least 100 years. Well, I mean, it's always worked this way. We figured it out 100 years ago. It's only relative to a particular observer. All motion is relative, and there's only relative motion. So the muon's going really fast relative to me, relative to the observer sitting on the ground. And according to me, it's going really fast. And so it gets to live a lot longer than it ought to. The clock on the muon, if it had a clock, I mean, it is a subatomic particle, would still measure 2 microseconds. So how does that work? Like that seems like a paradox. The muon says it only lives 2 microseconds. I say it lives a lot longer. Where's the reconciliation? The reconciliation is that when you're moving, rulers look shorter. Lengths look shorter. Things get contracted. So here's what the muon did. The muon still thinks it lives for only 2 microseconds, but the ground looks closer to it. Its length from the upper atmosphere to the ground has contracted. And so it's able to say, hey, the ground's right there, and that's plenty. 2 microseconds, I can get there in no time. According to me, on the ground, the atmosphere is way far away. But the muon is going really fast, so its clock looks like it's running slow. So it looks like it has plenty of time to make it. Either way, the muon hits the ground. We all agree on that. We all agree on the event. But we trade. Moving clocks can run slow. Remember, in relativity, descriptions of length or durations of time or even ordering events can change depending on your viewpoint. That's the price you pay for switching to pure relativity and having no absolute reference frame. That is the price. But that is the way, as weird as it sounds, that's the way the universe appears to work. Experimentally confirmed. Until further notice, that's the way the universe works. Here's another example. Atomic clocks, you know, really, really, really precise clocks. Leave one on the ground, put one in an airplane. Airplane's not going really fast. I mean, fast for us, but compared to the speed of light, not very fast. But atomic clocks are really flipping accurate. And you know what? That atomic clock that got to move, its clock runs slow. We can measure it. We've measured this. We've tested it. We've observed it. This is the way the universe works. This trading of time and space, this idea of length contraction, this idea of time dilation, that is appears to be the way the universe works. Now, like that concept of moving rulers look short, or if you're moving lengths get contracted, things look shorter. You can fit an 8-foot car in a 7-foot garage. Sure can. If you got a garage with like a door on both ends, and then you open the doors, and then there's a car coming along at close to the speed of light, and right when it's in the garage, even though it's an 8-foot car and you've only got a 7-foot garage, you can close both doors simultaneously and then open them back up. And then as the car is moving, because if the car stops, then like it's not relativity anymore. By the way, relativity only really kicks in when things are going really fast or have lots of energy. Otherwise, things kind of revert, but Newtonian dynamics, that the laws of physics that Newton came up with, are perfectly fine for normal everyday situations. You only start to notice the difference when things are getting close to the speed of light. That's when Newton isn't good enough anymore. So anyway, this car that's moving close to the speed of light, it's zooming through, and in the instant when it's in the garage, I close the garage door and open them right back up again, that 8-foot car would fit. Because as it's zooming by me, that car looks shorter. It's been contracted. And you're wondering how this works? Like, how, if it's really physically 8 feet long, how can it fit in the 7-foot garage? It's that's because we disagree about the ordering of events. In my frame, sitting next to the garage, the car looks short, and I'm opening and closing and then opening the garage doors at the exact same time. They're simultaneous, both of them. But in the car's reference frame, if you're sitting in the passenger seat of the car and you busted out a ruler, you'd measure an 8-foot car because you're going along with the car, right? That's your reference frame. But in your reference frame, the garage doors don't close and open at the exact same time. There's a delay because one's slightly farther away from you and one's slightly closer. And so you have to account for that. And so actually, one would close and then open, and the other one would close and open just as you were kind of like sliding through the garage. And it all works out. The mathematics works out to tell you about what particular reference frame or point of view would give you for the ordering of events. And you can get weird stuff like that. You can have muons going a lot farther than you expect them. You can have twins of different ages. You can have atomic clocks with different times. And you can have 8-foot cars and 7-foot garages. What else can you get if you live in a universe with relativity? Plenty of stuff. For example, you may have heard that the center of the Milky Way galaxy is really far away. After all, space is big. I think I did a whole episode about how big space is. But if you go really, really, really fast, let's say you were to accelerate at 1G, where G is the gravitational field of the Earth, the acceleration of the Earth due to gravity. If you were to instead build a rocket that pushed you, and that you would feel pressed into the floor at the same acceleration. If you were able to keep that up, check this out. You would never go faster than the speed of light. You get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to the speed of light because you're always going faster and faster. Your foot's always on the pedal, always accelerating. You would reach the center of the Milky Way galaxy in about 20 years. I'm not joking. That's because you've traded space for time, or time for space. But that's according to you on the rocket ship, because you're moving. Because you're moving, that distance to the center of the Milky Way seems contracted, it seems shorter, it seems closer. And every time you get faster and faster, it seems closer, even closer than before. That's pretty awesome. Everyone else sitting on the Earth will think it would take you 50,000 years. That's their point of view. They're watching on Earth. They see that rocket ship going. It takes 50,000 years to get to the center of the Milky Way galaxy. But you on the ship, because you're going so fast, your own personal, not just perception of time, but the physical time, you would age 20 years. You would only have to read 20 years worth of books or listen to 20 years worth of podcasts, excellent ones such as the one you're listening to right now, only 20 years worth, and you'd be there. You'd be at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So travel, interstellar travel or whatever, always takes time. It always takes a lot of time, but it doesn't necessarily have to be your time. It can be somebody else's time. And check this out. If you were to actually go at the speed of light, which you can't because there is that speed limit, light experiences no perception of time. A photon, a beam of light that's born, to it, instantly dies. It does not perceive, if you want to think about it this way, it does not perceive the passage of time. Photons or light do not age because they are going at that speed of light. Outside of the speed of light, just looking at it, looks like a beam of light takes forever. It takes 8 minutes to get from the sun to the earth. But according to that beam of light, it takes no time at all. And that means the distance, the perceived distance of the photon from the sun to the earth is zero. They're right next to each other, according to the beam of light. Now, you can never ride along with it, but you can still think about it. Oh, and by the way, if you want to accelerate constantly at 1G, you would need like a lot of gas. So a little bit implausible, but it's a nice thing to think about. If you can figure out a way to do it, you personally could reach the center of the Milky Way galaxy in only 20 years. I get questions a lot about the expansion of the universe. It appears our expansion of the universe, if you look out at the most distant galaxies, all galaxies are moving away from each other. Edwin Hubble discovered it not long after all the special relativity business was figured out. It looks like some galaxies are flying away from us or receding from us at faster than the speed of light. And you can actually create a scenario in your head that doesn't involve galaxies or anything. You just imagine like a rubber band, and I stand on one end and you stand on one end, and it's a really big rubber band, and someone's yanking on it. And at first, when we're close together and we're like measuring how fast the other person is moving away from us, it's like pretty slow. But then the farther and farther away, just the way rubber bands work, someone's pulling it at a constant speed, like someone's just tugging at it. But the speed that I measure, the velocity that I measure of you going away actually goes up and 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 up. In that, eventually, I'll measure you as having a speed faster than the speed of light. Now you're like, wait a minute. Didn't you just go on a whole heck of a bunch about this universal speed limit and how it's critical to developing the theory of relativity and blah, blah, blah. Special relativity, I'll tell you now, is a law of local physics. Put it another way, it's a local law of physics. It means if a rocket ship is blasting right in front of your nose, you will never ever measure it to be faster than the speed of light. There is a speed limit. For things that are really far away, galaxies on the other side of the universe, special relativity says nothing. It is not the domain of special relativity. You need something more general, something that can apply to something as big as the whole entire universe. A theory of relativity that is more general than special, a general theory of relativity. And under general relativity, which I haven't gotten into, that's a whole different ballgame. That's galaxy that's way far away on the other side of the universe. It can have any velocity it wants relative to you. It doesn't care. It's just not a violation of the laws of physics. Special relativity, which is what we're focusing on now. Special relativity talks about stuff that's happening near you. It's a local law of physics. And in the theory, it defines what local is and what is and what is not local. That's all consistent in the mathematics. The definition is there. It says, yes, this thing is local. It's part of the domain of special relativity. You will never measure it being faster than the speed of light. Outside that region, really, really far away, let's use the other side of the universe, can have any speed it wants. It can have any speed it wants because you're operating under a different set of rules, a larger set of rules, a general set of rules, which is what Einstein, when he took this principle of relativity and tried to actually do gravity with it, to actually basically take the ideas that Maxwell, or the language that Maxwell had used to define electricity and magnetism, and apply it to fix Newton's laws, the laws of motion and gravity. What he got out of the deal was the general theory of relativity, a relativistic theory of gravity. And the key idea behind GR, general relativity, is this, is this acceleration on a rocket ship. We talked about in the last episode about the principle of relativity, about Galileo's insight, that if you're like in the middle of a plane or at the bottom of a ship, you can't see outside, you can't do any science experiment that... And as long as you're not accelerating, you're just cruising along at a constant speed, you can't do any science experiment inside the ship or inside the airplane that tells you that you're moving that fast. You throw a ball, it looks like you're throwing a ball on flat level ground. It doesn't matter. Einstein extended this relativity principle to acceleration, to the idea of acceleration. He said, if you're sitting on the ground on Earth and you feel a one gravitational unit, one G, of the Earth is pulling you down, that if you put yourself in a rocket ship, closed all the windows, and boosted that rocket so that it's moving at 1G, you couldn't do any science experiments to tell the difference. Right? You would drop an apple, the apple would fall to the floor of the rocket. And you couldn't tell if it's because the rocket is pushing you, because it's going at an acceleration, or if the rocket is still on the launch pad and you haven't left the Earth. You can't tell a difference. That's a principle, an equivalence principle. There's an equivalence between rocket ships accelerating and gravitational pull. And so this means if moving clocks run slow, which they do in special relativity, then accelerated clocks run slow. And I already talked about that. If you're accelerating towards the center of the Milky Way, you're going faster and faster and faster. Your clock runs slower and slower and slower. If accelerated clocks run slow because you're in a rocket ship, clocks run slow if you have strong gravity. They're equivalent. They're the same thing. There's no way to tell them apart. That means clocks on the surface of the Earth run slower than clocks high up, because clocks closer to the surface of the Earth have a larger gravitational pull, and so it's as if they are being accelerated harder, which means they run slower. Isn't that a doozy? That means time runs slower near the surface of the Earth, and dang it, we can do this test with atomic clocks. Dang it, GPS satellites, if your little phone wants to give you an accurate position using GPS, it has to take this into account. If general relativity was incorrect about this, then your GPS would just be flat out wrong. It would give you the wrong answer. It must take this time dilation due to the gravitational effect of the Earth into account. And the difference between the satellite's time and your time, they're different because of general relativity. And they're even slower near black holes. I talked about this in the episode about falling into a black hole. Fun episode, by the way. I'll return to the topic of black holes again. I think I already did once, twice, whatever. I'll talk about black holes again. But this is why, as you get closer and closer to a black hole, gravity gets stronger and stronger. Your perception of time, the physical time, passage of time, slows down. What about the constancy of the speed of light? Are we really sure it's constant? This is like one of the favorite crackpot theories out there, is say, let's start with speed of light is changing. All right. Whenever someone says that to you, they're not the first person to think that. They are not the first. There have been serious, real scientists that have looked into what if the speed of light is changing. All evidence, and we've gone to test this because you know for sure, whoever is able to demonstrate that the speed of light changes, it's like instant Nobel Prize, right? Instant fame going down in the history books. This was the person who figured out that speed of light is not really constant, and we have a revolution in our worldview of physics. As far as we can tell, it is. All right? Remember, it's one of the axioms, it's one of the principal ideas behind relativity. So every time we test relativity, we're implicitly testing the constancy of the speed of light, and special relativity ain't going nowhere, as far as we can tell. Even in really crazy environments, we test it all the time. And as far as we can tell, the speed of light is constant. So again, until further notice, the speed of light's going to be a constant. Okay, I think that's a good stopping point. That I kind of breezed through some applications of special relativity, but when I focused on like length contraction, time dilation, ordering events, there's all this other stuff about measurements of mass and energy and relationships there. It's all the same math, but just like ported over to talking about different stuff. For example, if you get closer and closer to the speed of light, your mass energy goes up, and that kind of sucks. So it makes it harder and harder to push you closer and closer. The whole E equals MC squared thing, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, that actually comes from that Minkowski, Lorentz. I didn't talk about Lorentz dude a lot, but he was one of the original people who put the language into this. In fact, he came up with this before Einstein, not the principle of relativity and the physics stuff, but like the mathematical description that I've used. When I say things like, when I talk about, like one reference frame or one point of view looking at an object that's moving and measuring its lifetime and its speed and the distance is moving versus another, the mathematical operation that allows us to translate from one point of view to another is what's called a Lorentz transformation. And when you apply that plus the Minkowski space-time stuff, four-dimensional universe type stuff, to things like momentum and energy, kinetic energy, things about movement, you get E equals MC squared. It comes out of the math that way. That's the origin of those kind of equations. That's the kind of thing that tells you there's an equivalence between mass and energy, that they're two sides of the same coin, the same way that time and space are two sides of the same space-time coin. That's the origin of E equals MC squared. I'm sure I'll do another episode someday focusing on the energy and the mass conversion, nuclear physics, all that great stuff. I know this has been a pretty couple heavy episodes, and actually I wasn't planning for it originally to be two episodes, but I needed to chop it up to give it justice, to give it its due. So thanks a lot for your patience. Thanks a lot for playing along and listening. Keep those questions coming, please. I beg you. I'm desperate for questions. Actually, I get tons of questions. Great question. Thank you so much, everyone who's been sending questions. Keep them coming. I'm trying to find ways to get some faster episodes out. This was not a good example of it. Sorry about that. But keep those coming. Next time, I promise it will be a more fun, lighthearted episode. All right. Next episode. I promise. Okay. We'll do there. If you want some faster stuff, some more lighthearted stuff, go on YouTube. Look up Space in Your Face. It's a show I do. It's really fun. It only take 2 minutes, unlike this episode. All right. It'll only take 2 minutes of your life to watch that. It's really fun. Also, listen to Real Space Podcast. It's a show where I interview other scientists about what they do. Lots of fun show. I have lots of great conversations. I learn a lot, actually, from having these kind of conversations. I'm sure you'll learn a lot, too. And I also ask people stupid questions. It's really fun. And lastly, some people generously contributed to my Fiat Physica campaign to get some gear. I'd like to thank a couple people in particular, Jennifer Mirsky and Janet Johnson. Thanks so much for your contributions. If you're in the giving mood, go to askaspaceman.com and there's a link to a Patreon page. I'm trying to collect some money for some very simple stuff, really. Really what I'd like to do is be able to hire a professional editor. Imagine that. Someone that could just tweak the audio, tweak the video, get it out. That will free up a lot of my time so that I can do more episodes. That's the goal. I want to do more episodes, but I'm limited by my time because I also have a day job. So if you'd like to hear more Ask a Spaceman, go to askaspaceman.com, click on the Patreon link. You know, $3, $5 a month. That's nothing. All right. Even I have $3 a month, and I would pay myself if it actually made a difference. Thank you so much for listening. Keep those questions coming. Someday we'll get to complete knowledge of time and space. We made a big jump today because we talked about time and space today and the last episode. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this. Let me know in iTunes, everywhere you can review it. Say really nice things about me. It makes me feel better as a person. Really, I have really low self-esteem. And so anything positive you can send my way, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time for complete knowledge of time and space.
Now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.